welcome to the State of Florida Sports Podcast, presented by the USA Today Network. Here's your host, Tim Walters.
Mike Norvell has needed a signature win during his tenure at Florida State, and this past Sunday, he got it. In one of the more dramatic games for the Seminoles in quite some time, LSU almost mounted a comeback before a blocked extra point preserved a huge 24-23 victory for Florida State as time expired. It sent home the crowd of 68,000 in New Orleans shocked, regardless of which team they were rooting for. So, has Florida State finally turned the corner, or do they still have a lot of work to do before returning to be a serious contender in the ACC, let alone all of college football? To help sort out what to make of this current group of Seminoles, I welcome in Carter Carles, the Seminoles beat reporter for the Tallahassee Democrat. Carter's going to drop some knowledge and make you at least 1% smarter. Hello again, everybody. I'm Tim Walters, and thank you once again for joining me on the State of Florida Sports Podcast, powered by the USA Today Network. This podcast utilizes our Florida Sports Network of beat writers, columnists, and some special guests to bring you up to speed on the most important sports topics. Our Florida network consists of 17 news sites that encompass the state. We encourage you to subscribe to your hometown newspaper, and of course this podcast, to help support the incredible journalism done by our talented staffs. Carter Carles took over as the Tallahassee Democrat's main Seminoles beat writer over the summer, but he's no stranger to the team. He had been working alongside our former writer before taking over as the main man. He'll tell us what to expect for the rest of the year with the Seminoles, and we'll also learn about how he got to where he is along the way. Carter, welcome to your inaugural appearance on the podcast.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me on, Tim.
Yeah, no problem. So we're going to start with Sunday night's huge victory for the Seminoles, which I talked about in the intro. They go to Louisiana, an underdog. They take a sizable lead as LSU's offense sputtered. But late in the game, you know, they almost lost it, but that extra point block was huge. But earlier on in the game, the Seminoles were leading 7-3, and Mike Norvell decided to pass on a short field goal and go for it when he was in LSU territory, and they ended up not getting it. So, you know, that could have cost them the game, let's say, if that extra point is not blocked. So what did you make of that decision, and did he explain the reasoning behind why he decided to go for it there?
Yeah, I think it was a decision that I had actually no problem with, given the situation. It was 7-3. They would have gone up by 11. Then you get the ball at halftime. Being aggressive, I mean, they easily, that could have been something that puts the game away. I think what I would criticize, and what I have criticized, is the play call itself. They ran kind of a opposite side of the field, wide side of the field, go route, back shoulder fade, whatever you want to call it, to their shortest receiver in Micah Pittman. I think if you're going to do a play like that, probably a lot more efficient if it's one of your taller guys, such as Johnny Wilson or Malik McClain. And so that's the part of the decision I didn't like, but their offense had been converting a ton of third downs. They started the game 6-7. So my thought was that with how efficient the offense was going, they had a chance to really put the game away. You know, if you start off the first drive of the second half and make it 21-3 or even 17-3, I mean, that is kind of a backbreaker there. So anyway, didn't have too much of a decision. It's one of those where, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but it's more the play call that I would take issue with.
All right. Makes sense to me. Well, you know, we talk about the special teams. It's one of those things that we all know is important, but we don't really think about it until we have to. So, you know, on this night, FSU special teams, they literally won the game with that extra point block. But you also had Jared Verse's early field goal block. Can you ever recall a time where FSU won a game by blocking an extra point? And talk a little bit about the improvement of this special teams unit.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that ever. I mean, to have not just the blocked field goal, the blocked extra point, the two muffed punts, and also, I mean, Florida State had their own special teams problems as well. They had the two kicks out of bounds on kickoffs. They missed a field goal early on in the game. and they weren't really doing much in the kickoff return game. So this was a special teams unit that hadn't been very good in the last couple of years. And they looked to improve by adding some really good returners in Micah Pittman. He's the guy who returns punts for them. Winston Wright was going to be their kickoff returner before he was in a car accident in March. But so they added some pieces, and you thought maybe the return game is where you're going to see this improvement, but not the blocking game and the kick coverage game. That was definitely a surprise. I think to me, it speaks more to LSU's sort of mistakes and issues than it did to Florida State's, just simply because when we talked to Jared Verse after the game, he said that he was unblocked. And you go back and watch that left side of the LSU's, you know, line, they didn't block him at all. I don't even think he was touched. And then on the second block, they totally changed their scheme and how they blocked it. They kind of squeezed in, and it was something that Jared Verse said that they had never seen them do on film at any point at Notre Dame from what they had watched. So I think they almost got in their heads a little bit. They tried to mix things up, and Shaheem Brown, to his credit, you watch that play, he really went all out, really went all out. I mean, he had the extension of the arm. He dove in. It was a play where if he does anything even slightly differently, he may not block that kick. So give credit where it's due. That was an impressive play. Jared Verse is someone, he blocked an extra point or a field goal, I believe, in the spring game. So we know he's capable of doing it, but LSU also had some gaffes, and really those two muff punts really, really burned them as well.
Yeah, and definitely aside from the special teams, we'll be talking about Verse in a little bit here as far as his defensive play as well. But first, you know, we got to go to the offense here, because we all knew Jordan Travis had wheels, and last year, you know, he showed some decent potential. But boy, he just shredded LSU in this game with some great passes. And so talk about his improvement as a passer, and did he exceed what you thought he would do against this Tigers defense, which, you know, LSU is usually one of the best in the nation, and some of those throws he made were just pinpoint beautiful.
Yeah, and you look at last season and then the years before, he had struggles with injuries. He was never the guy per se. I mean, last year, him and Mackenzie Milton were kind of going back and forth. Then he sort of became that guy toward the end of last season. You started to see it come on. He had 17 total touchdowns, two interceptions, and a 65% completion percentage in the last seven games he played last season. And you started to see that carry over to the offseason. He was named the starter. He was the submitted starter. And Florida State hadn't entered an offseason with a guy submitted as that starter since the 2014 season, Jameis Winston's second season. So it was something that you could tell gave him confidence. Then they add some receivers in the portal that have really given a boost to this offense. We mentioned Micah Pittman, Johnny Wilson. Those are some guys that have been effective so far. So you saw Jordan Travis throughout the offseason really grow in his confidence. He was someone who is not just a one-read quarterback anymore. He had the patience to stay in the pocket. That also speaks to the offensive line improvement. He, you know, would work through his progressions pretty well. He'd make the right decision, and he'd be confident. He wasn't afraid to take a chance and hit a guy one-on-one, because the fact of the matter is this was the worst wide receiving core in the ACC last year. Now it's probably above average. That dramatic improvement has helped him. And you've seen it, you know, you talk about the LSU game. He probably only made three bad decisions all game. And where he really impressed was on third down and in the middle of the field. I charted what he did on the middle of the field. He is 8-9 for 138 yards and a touchdown when throwing over the middle. So highly effective. And that was an area of his game he needed to improve. He really looked the part in that regard. His timing, his anticipation, he really just took what the defense gave him And I think also Florida State had a great game plan. Really felt like they took advantage of LSU's poor linebacker play, throwing over the middle and using motion and some misdirection to kind of, you know, throw off their eye discipline. So they really schemed it up well, and I thought Travis really took advantage of that.
Oh, yeah, that flea flicker play, that toss and catch, I mean, that was a teardrop from the sky right into Ontario Wilson's hand. So, I mean, that was just gorgeous. But, you know, as I was watching the game, the one thing that I really noticed that they had to improve on offense was the run game. I mean, granted, LSU, like I said, they're traditionally one of the best defenses in the nation, especially at stopping the run. So I'm sure, you know, they were shocked at how effective the passing game was. But Treshawn Ward, you know, he led the Seminoles with 49 yards. He had that costly fumble late. Jordan Travis was next with 31 yards. So do you expect Norvell to try and, you know, ground out a little bit more against Louisville, who obviously doesn't have the defense of LSU? Or do you think we're going to see Travis airing it out again, you know, to Wilson and those improved receiving core that you just talked about?
I do think Florida State does want to run the ball this year. I mean, there's a reason they had 406 yards rushing against Duquesne. They've got a three-headed monster in Trey Benson, Lawrence Toafili, Treshawn Ward. I thought that had more to do with the game plan that LSU had. You could tell they were really selling out against the run, particularly between the tackles. They were stacking the box. You know, they had, you know, seven guys in the box a lot of times, and they just couldn't get anything up the middle. And I think after a while, Florida State realized that, and they started to do more creative runs to the outside. You saw sort of in-arounds and jet sweeps and things like that. And I think they got some decent gains. But it still wasn't the run game still wasn't something they abandoned. They ran on a lot of second downs. They ran on a lot of first downs. And I think the reason why they were so efficient on third down, one of the reasons was because they would get a few yards. It wouldn't be third and 10, it'd be third and six for them, or third and three. And they could kind of manage that a little bit better. But yeah, against that defensive line, hard to get much going, but I thought they did a decent job of at least trying to mix it up a little bit, mixing up run and pass to where they weren't predictable. You know, they easily could have thrown it 50 times, but, you know, Travis threw it 33 times, and I thought they had a nice blend of sort of their play calling and formations and sort of how they attacked the defense.
Yeah, you mentioned they had 33 passes. They ran 38 times for 132 yards, which only breaks down to about 3.5 yards per carry. And you're right, the middle play, it's funny. My wife is a Florida State grad. She got her master's there, and she's sitting next to me on the couch, and she kept saying, "Why do they keep running it up the middle? They're not going anywhere." And I kept telling her, they're trying to set something else up. But yeah, nobody likes the old dive play up the middle.
Yeah, it's also like a couple of those runs were, like, Trey Benson is a guy who I think has incredible talent, but he's not, he still has some room to grow as far as like patience and figuring out the right holes to go through. He had a little bit of that too. I think Treshawn Ward is really good in that regard, but he's not someone who can take a pounding up the middle. And Lawrence Toafili has some room to grow in that regard as well. So, yeah, I mean, like, all these three running backs are good in their own way and maybe have room to grow in their own way too. And I think that's why you also saw them involving some receivers in the running game. And I mean, you saw Travis running around a little bit too as well.
Yeah, I definitely think that Mike Norvell called a great game, and it obviously showed. So now it's time to turn to the other side of the ball. Let's talk some defense. And, you know, as I mentioned, Jared Verse, not only blocking a field goal on special teams, he has 2 sacks, 2.5 tackles for loss. Tatum Bethune, the UCF transfer, this guy is a physical specimen, and I got to see him a lot last year with UCF, and he had 7 tackles and a sack. And, you know, the secondary limited LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels to just 209 yards passing. So how much better is this defense than last year, and how do they stack up against ACC foes like Clemson and Miami?
Yeah, heading into the season, I thought that this defense should be better, but they didn't have quite a dominant player like Jermaine Johnson, who is just an unbelievable player. I mean, he's the ACC Defensive Player of the Year for a reason. But I think Jared Verse might be changing my mind pretty soon, because if this guy, I mean, he's got three sacks through two games. He's got the blocked field goal. No, I don't think he's going to get two sacks every game, but if he has 10 plus sacks by the end of the season, I mean, that is quite the impact. I think the difference when you look at him and Jermaine Johnson is Jermaine Johnson was an elite run stopper. He is someone that could really set the edge and really be disruptive in the running game. Jared Verse, he has the potential to be a better pass rusher than Jermaine Johnson as far as just sack total and disruption in the passing game. He is an incredibly fast player who, I mean, you saw him with those speed rushes getting off to the edge. Our defensive coordinator at FSU, Adam Fuller, he was telling us in the spring that this is the fastest defensive end he's ever coached. And, you know, he was here last year to coach Jermaine. So I thought like the Jermaine Johnson expectations were unfair to put on this kid, especially with him coming from the FCS level. But now that we've seen him for a couple games, he has really exceeded expectations. And I think he's someone that can get you double-digit sacks this year and be a first-team all-ACC guy. Elsewhere, I think maybe the strength of this defense is that they don't have a lot of glaring weaknesses. I still am skeptical a little bit of the cornerback play, particularly the depth there. But they held their own against a very talented receiving core in LSU. I think that's probably the position to watch, though, when you start to see, you know, these games against Miami and Florida and Clemson and NC State. How do those cornerbacks hold up? I think the linebacking play has improved a lot. And then at safety, I mean, everyone knew what Jamie Robinson could do. He's a first-team All-ACC guy last year. But Akeem Dent, I mean, that first possession, that pass breakup with Kayshawn Booty, without that, LSU takes a 7-0 lead, and that game could look a lot different. Keem Dent has really come on, and I think Florida State has a case as having the best safeties in the ACC this year.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, the improvement and just watching them play, it was really something. And some of that excitement is returning to the Florida State defensive field again. So, you know, that's got to be a big boon for Mike Norvell, who obviously he didn't quite get off to the storybook start he would have liked at FSU. And, you know, this to me, this is his biggest win. And I'm sure most people will agree. I know he beat Miami last year and you love to get that state rivalry, but those were two teams with losing records. So, you know, to beat LSU and their new head coach, you know, that it's such a big thing for them. So what was it like for you just watching Norvell after the game? He just broke down in tears in an, you know, a public display of emotion you don't often get to see out of a coach. How happy were you for him?
Yeah, it was, you could tell this was such a, I mean, excitement, but also relief, because this has been a program that has had its fair share of disappointments in the last few years, especially or even with Norvell. I mean, talk about the end of Jimbo Fisher's time here, also Willie Taggart. But even under Norvell, you have the Jacksonville State loss. You have the Travis Hunter debacle. Like, you've had some pretty big blowouts of that 2020 season. He really had to come a long way. And I think a lot of people on the outside didn't quite realize just how big of a rebuild this was going to be, beginning with, you know, Norvell taking over in 2020. And certainly he was dealt a tough hand having to take over during, you know, the COVID year. But I think this was kind of the first tangible, like, okay, the rebuild, like the progress is real. I think last season, you kind of say, okay, well, 5 wins is more than 3 wins, but you still lost to Jacksonville State. And you still lost to a couple, you know, double digit games, and you still couldn't close against teams like Notre Dame. Well, now you're seeing, okay, they just closed out a big win. And, you know, I don't want to get too ahead, because I think LSU has a chance to be a 6-6 team after this season. But still, that moment, that atmosphere, playing in the only standalone game in prime time on a Sunday, that, I agree, it's the biggest one he's had. The Miami game last year came at the very end of the year when, you know, both teams, no one was paying attention to either team. Everyone was paying attention to Florida State and LSU on Sunday. And not only does it build confidence for him and his players, but I think it also will have an impact on the recruiting trail as well.
Oh, yeah, certainly. And, you know, the one thing that I really did notice, because LSU, you know, normally a recruiting hotbed, one of the best teams in the country usually, and they get a certain type of athlete as far as size, as far as physicality, as far as star rating. And Florida State had players that were able to actually stand up against those guys that you have not seen over the last 3 or 4 years. So to me, physically, you know, getting those players that now can compete, I think that that's probably one of the biggest things I've seen out of Florida State.
Absolutely. I mean, I would say the number one thing Florida State has done in terms of improvement is the trenches. I mean, especially in the offensive line, what Mike Norvell inherited was truthfully the probably one of the worst offensive lines in the country. I mean, they ranked at the bottom of pretty much every stat imaginable that you can think of that measures the offensive line. And for them to have the success they did, I mean, they gave up a sack on the very first play, and then they gave up one more sack the entire rest of the game. And yes, Mason Smith was out, but they still have some really good players on that LSU defensive line. So that was huge. I mean, the defensive line, you've got two players in the middle, Robert Cooper and Fabian Lovett, who were honorable mention All-ACC guys last year, and they're two of the most experienced college football players you'll find. Got a lot of depth behind those guys. Then defensive end, I mean, we talked about Jared Verse. Dennis Briggs is another impactful guy. Derek McClendon, another quality defensive end. So, like, the trenches are set. Now, I think where they still have to improve is tight end is not a very good position for them. Wide receiver still has a lot of room to grow. Even running back. I mean, I think they've got a good trio right now, but on the recruiting trail, I think it could be a little bit better. And certainly post Travis, I think they've got a lot of figuring out to do with their quarterback situation. And so they're still not close, in my opinion, to completing the rebuild as far as like getting back to where they were. Like, this is not a team that's going to win 12 games this year. But 2 years down the line, if they keep hitting on these transfer portal guys and they keep recruiting the way that they have on the, in the trenches, then, you know, this is a team that can really build into something.
Oh, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the rest of this season now, because FSU's next opponent is Louisville, and the Seminoles lost at home last year 31-23 to the Cardinals. Louisville looked flat in a 31-7 loss to Syracuse to open the season, and between the taping of this podcast and the FSU game on the 16th, they'll play UCF. And that game last year between UCF and Louisville was a lot of fun, but I have a feeling UCF may get the better of Louisville this year, but you never know. So, you know, what do you know about this year's version of Louisville, and how do you see this next game going for the Seminoles?
Yeah, I think going into this game, you saw it as a coin flip game. I think there was like probably four coin flip games on Florida State's schedule. That was Louisville, that was LSU, that was Florida, and then the last one I'm blanking on for whatever reason. I felt like NC State, Clemson, and Miami, you could count those as losses before the season. There's one more in there that I'm just kind of blanking on, but Louisville was one of them. A road game on a Friday night, that was tough. And I think Wake Forest was the other one I was thinking of. So with Louisville, though, Malik Cunningham has the potential to be a pretty special quarterback at times. I don't know if he has the consistency. I think he got a little overhyped before the season, to be quite frank. But every once in a while, he has that game, those games in him where he can have 100, 150 rushing yards, and he's a load to, you know, bring down and deal with. And you saw how successful Jayden Daniels was with running the football. But the problem was with Jayden Daniels was he just couldn't find open guys. And when he did, those guys weren't catching the ball. And so you'd think that Louisville might have better execution in that regard. And it's also a home game. And Florida State could be sluggish coming off a bye week. We just left practice today, Wednesday, and Mike Norvell was very upset with how his players had practiced. He kind of expressed like, hey, this is, we can't be going through the motions. Like, we can't still be celebrating this win. We need to practice with intensity. And so I think Florida State, the challenge for them is, how do you handle the success and how do you not post a dud? This ACC Atlantic looks to be better than it has been as far as the non-Clemson teams. So I don't think you can really take any game for granted, and especially not, you know, a road game on a Friday night at Louisville.
No, I agree. And, you know, but let's say they do win that Louisville game, and then they have Boston College, a game where they'll probably be favored. So if the Seminoles start off 4-0, then you really look at the hard part of the schedule. You get Wake Forest, who's number 23 right now. You get NC State, who I believe is somewhere around 12 or 13 last I saw. And then you also get Clemson, who's number 5 right now. So, you know, if you come out of that, let's say 2-1, you're probably happy. So I guess my question really is, can Florida State beat Clemson?
Well, I would have told you before the season, no way. And I don't want to overreact to week one. But they did not inspire a lot of confidence in me when I watched them against Georgia Tech. I do believe they have a top three, maybe top five defense in the country. So that would be certainly a problem. But what I'm really not inspired by when it comes to Clemson is their offense. I think DJ Uiagalelei, there's a lot of hype in the preseason about, oh, he's lost 30 pounds. Oh, they're going to open the offense up more for him, yada, yada. Well, they surely didn't do that against Georgia Tech. And to be quite frank, it did not look good at all for that offense. And yeah, it opened up a little bit at the end, but Georgia Tech, their over-under win total before the season was at 3. So that they're the worst team in the ACC this year. And for Clemson to be that close toward the end of the game, I thought was probably a little discouraging if you're a Tigers fan. I think the question is, again, who is going to be the quarterback for Clemson when they come to Florida State? It's a mid-October game, and they've got a five-star quarterback, Cade Klubnik, who, you know, I'm a Texas guy. I'm from Texas. I thought he was the best quarterback in this last class. You saw him in the spring game, and you saw him at the end of the Georgia Tech game absolutely light it up. And if I'm Clemson, they in the past have not been afraid to make a change at quarterback. Kelly Bryant was good enough to take him to the college football playoff. And what did Dabo Swinney do the next year? He replaced him with Trevor Lawrence. Now, again, Trevor Lawrence was, you know, one of the greater quarterbacks college football has ever seen. I'm not saying Kate Klubnik's him, but also I don't know if DJ Uiagalelei is even as good as Kelly Bryant was. So my whole thing is, what will be interesting is, where are they going to be at with that timeline? Will DJ Uiagalelei figure it out and he'll be the starter? Or will this be the week where it's Cade Klubnik's first start? I don't know. And so it's hard to predict. And that week one, again, I don't want to overreact too much, but I watched him all of last year. I watched him, you know, the week he played against Notre Dame in 2020. I'm just not really confident that this is a guy who can take this offense to another level. And with Florida State's defense being pretty good this year, I think you feel a lot better about that game now than you did, you know, before the season.
There you go. I love the name Cade Klubnik. It sounds like he should be like a villain in a Hanna-Barbera cartoon, but that's a great, great college quarterback name. So the final four games of the season, when we look at those, they're bookended by Miami on November 5th and Florida on November 25th. So when you look at the three state teams, all of which look improved versions from last year, which of the three do you think is the best right now? Or maybe even UCF. You could throw UCF in there if you want to. And which team would you say between Miami and Florida will Florida State have the better chance against when they play them?
So FSU fans are going to hate me, but I'll pick Miami as the best team right now. I could change that. I know everyone wants to hop on the Florida bandwagon after this past week, and I thought Anthony Richardson looked pretty dang good, so I'm reserving the right to maybe change that. I do think Florida's got some tough games coming up against Kentucky and Tennessee, so I think we're going to learn a lot more about them by the end of this month. I still would be a little shocked if they escape the month undefeated. I think those are two toss-up games. Miami, I think, has the chance to really dominate a pretty trash coastal division this year. They will play Pittsburgh, who I think is a pretty solid team. But outside of that, I mean, we saw what Virginia Tech did in their first week. I don't think Virginia or Duke are really looking all that great. But, yeah, again, I just think Miami, they ended the season fairly strong. I believe they won five of their last six. The last half of last season, it was a little bit like Florida State, where they finally found their quarterback for the first time. You know, they had the Derek King experiment. They finally found a guy in Tyler Van Dyke. Yeah, I do think the Heisman hype is pretty premature. I still think we got to learn a little bit more about this kid, and he still has more to prove. But I do think that just their schedule and the continuity they have bringing him back sets up to have a 9 or 10 win kind of season. I think Florida, with the competition they have to face, and Florida State with a few of the toss-up games on their schedule, I think they're looking more at like an 8 win kind of season total for right now. So I'm going with Miami, but things could change. I do think it is fairly close between the three.
Oh, yeah, and I have to say Richardson was impressive. You know, from an alumnus point of view, I went to Florida, and as I mentioned earlier, I married a Seminole, so things are always interesting around our household, especially at the end of November when that game comes along. All right, so Carter, here's where we come to the fun part of the podcast. I have five diabolical trivia questions about Florida State, and I want to see how you do. So I've told you an advanced trivia is coming, but I have not prepared you. So are you ready?
I don't know if I'll ever be ready, but you go ahead.
All right. So which current ACC teams do Florida State currently own the most wins against? So which team in the ACC all time does Florida State have the most wins against?
Oh, man. Okay. So am I naming like two or three teams? Is there like a specific total I should?
Well, I'll give you this hint that the team that they have the most wins against, the total is 31.
31. Okay, man, I am so like with the whole conference realignment stuff, I'm a little, like my knowledge is lacking a little, but I'm going to go, let's go NC State as one of them.
Very close. That's actually third. It's a little bit tricky. It's the team that they've played the most because both teams haven't always been in the ACC. It's actually Miami. They are 31-35 against Miami. Wake Forest is next. They're 30-8 against Wake. And then NC State, they're 26-15.
Gotcha. So not an embarrassing guess, but not an amazing guess.
No. That's good. You got one of the top three. All right. Number two. This one's easy. Come on. I've given you an easy one. Who was the first Seminole to win a Heisman Trophy?
Oh, man. I wow. Okay.
1993.
The only name popping in my head is Charlie Ward.
That is correct.
Okay, good.
Yeah, don't overthink it.
Yeah. I'm thinking, was there someone like in 1970 or something?
All right, so you're 1-1. Here we go. What Seminoles defensive tackle, who was number 9 in Heisman Trophy voting in 1979, went on to be a successful professional wrestler in the 90s and early 2000s?
Oh, man. You are really embarrassing me with these, because the one thing I don't know is my history when it comes to FSU. I don't know.
All right, old school WWF fans might remember him as Farouk, but his name, Ron Simmons.
Okay.
All right, here comes another tough one. What jersey number did Deion Sanders wear?
The only number popping into my head is 22.
Very close. It was 2. And the reason I actually looked that one up, I figured Deion being Deion, I thought he might want number 1. But nope, he didn't wear number 1. He wore number 2.
He was 21 in the pros, I want to say.
Ah, that sounds right. That does. Yeah, that sounds correct. All right. And finally, sorry, I have to laugh a little bit. Who was Doak Campbell?
Who is Doak Campbell? I believe he was he's from long ago. I want to say he was a president.
Hey, good job. He was the university's first president, and to be precise, from 1941 to 1957, he was president of Florida State College for Women and its successor, coeducational school, Florida State University. So he oversaw the creation of the new university. So I will give you credit for that one. Good job, Carter.
There we go. Oh, man. That my hesitation is probably embarrassing enough. I should just get it right off the bat. But, you know, sometimes you just hear these names and you never even think about them. You're just like, oh, yeah, it's called Doak Campbell. But you don't look into the guy's history as much. So hopefully fans will forgive me for that.
Considering I wanted the Jeopardy job that I didn't get, I just try and do it a little bit here on the podcast. So I'm the know-it-all who wouldn't know any of this if I didn't have the answers in front of me. So before I let you go, Carter, tell us a little bit about yourself. As I had mentioned in my intro, you are now the main man on the Seminoles beat. You started here earlier this year, really, and you've already kind of moved up to the front of the class. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you came here to be at the Tallahassee Democrat.
Yeah, so I think I mentioned I'm from Texas. I grew up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Consider myself a loud and proud Texan. So I don't really have the accent, which stinks. I kind of wish I did, but definitely have some Texanisms in me. Then after, you know, growing up, I attended Texas A&M, which FSU fans know pretty well. trying to not mention that too much around here, but kind of worked for the student paper there, had a few internships, and after graduating, I spent the next 3 college football seasons covering Notre Dame up in South Bend. So that was a really great experience. Got to learn a lot doing that. Got to learn a lot about Brian Kelly, which made last week's game a kind of a full circle moment for me a little bit. But then I came here, obviously, in January. I'd never lived in Florida before. I'd always heard about all the crazy people here and all the, you know, the Florida man, you know, you always see the headlines and stuff. And, you know, I consider myself someone who doesn't take us all seriously. And I just laugh at that kind of stuff. So I've enjoyed sort of the weirdness of Florida, and I love the warm weather. You know, when I was at South Bend, not having the sun and not having a blue sky, that hurt my feelings a lot. So being here in Florida has been nice. I'm really enjoying the job. And FSU fans have been great to deal with so far, and I really love to just interact with fans and, you know, meet people and go to tailgates and stuff before the game, just to kind of interact and kind of get to know readers and stuff like that. I think it's so important in what we do. So if you're listening and you want to reach out, just DM me or email me. I'll try to answer back as soon as I can. So really enjoy that aspect of it. I feel so blessed to just be able to do this job. So really enjoying it, and feel pretty fortunate that I'm, you know, in this position, able to write about sports for a living.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's good to hear. We're happy to have you here at the USA Today Network and Florida Sports Network. And you have a great editor in Jim Henry up there in Tallahassee. Known Jim for many years, and he's just great to work for. But here's a big question then, now knowing you're from Texas A&M. Do Florida State fans next week want Texas A&M to beat Miami? Do they root for Miami to beat Texas A&M? Or do they hope a comet hits the earth before then?
Probably the third one, but if they had to choose, I've actually asked a few people this. It seems like, just from Twitter and all that, it seems like everyone's like, hey, yeah, we're not fans of A&M, but we don't want Miami beating anybody. And I think they see that if Miami were to come to College Station and beat A&M, that their fans would be real loud and proud about it. And also, what's funny, though, is Michael Alford, the FSU athletic director, a couple of weeks ago went on ESPN and said that he's rooting for Miami in that game because he thinks it's great for the conference. And, you know, with all the business about the ACC and conference realignment, I think these ACC athletic directors, they kind of are rooting for its conference members. They want to be as strong as possible. Once the 12-team playoff becomes a thing, they want to get in as many teams as possible on a yearly basis. The stronger the schedule, the better your chances are. So it is funny. The AD is rooting for Miami, but I don't think any FSU fans will be.
Well, I'm sure it's really hard for them to ever want to root for anything Jimbo Fisher is associated with. But you never know. He did bring a national title there. So, Carter, is there anything else that you want us to know about the Seminoles? And if people want to read all of your great work, how do they find you on social media? And just give us all of your details.
Yeah, so my Twitter handle is at Carter Carls. Carter, just how you think you'd spell it. Carls, it's spelled K-A-R-E-L-S. Tallahassee.com is where you can find our stuff. Knowlesports.com as well. And then we have a podcast each week, the Knowles Sports Podcast. So you can check that out. We're also on Facebook at Knowles Sports. We're on Instagram at Knowles Sports. And got a lot of LSU coverage. I just wrote a practice report here for Wednesday's practice. So got a lot of content, even though it's a bye week. We never sleep on this beat. So you can find a lot at our website for sure.
Oh, that's awesome. I hear you. Well, Carter, it's really been a pleasure having you here. Thanks for making us all at least 1% smarter. And I look forward to speaking with you later on in the season.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Tim.
All right, no problem. And that's going to do it for yet another episode of the State of Florida Sports Podcast. I'm Tim Walters, and to quote Florida State legend Bobby Bowden, somehow I went from being too young to being too old. Somewhere in there, I must have been just right. But you were always just right, Coach Bowden, and you still are. Join us again next time.